Welcome back to the West Africa Squadron and its efforts against slavery. We find ourselves back on the West African coast in 1826, around the same time that the Netuno was fighting her valiant action as described in the previous video. Elsewhere along the coast, HMS Maidstone had seized another Brazilian slave ship south of the equator, as they were quite sure the ship had illegally loaded slaves north of that line before trying to flee over it for protection. However, with the recent case of the Activo, where the owners had tried to sue over the precise location of the seizure, the crew made an extra careful examination of the ship and they got lucky. One of the slaves turned out to be a British citizen. Not only was this court-admissible proof of where the slaves had come from, but it also meant the ship could be judged in an Admiralty court on charges of enslaving a British citizen instead of the more uncertain mixed court on charges of general slavery. And they were right to be cautious, as even getting the slaves taken ashore proved somewhat difficult in the face of the ship owners' claims, the resistance coming from the fact that if they were landed, the slaves would be on British soil and thus free, so even if they won the court case, they'd only get their ship back, not the slaves. Unfortunately, the British man, a local of Sierra Leone named Cacao, died partway through the proceedings, which meant the case defaulted back to the mixed court, which ruled similarly to the Activo case. So the ship owners got their brig back, and costs were awarded against Captain Bullen. But, also as with the Activo case, it seemed that once these cost awards were appealed and escalated higher, the matter was dismissed and Bullen didn't have to pay a penny. Unfortunately, 1826 would continue in a similar frustrating vein. Some biased judges on the mixed court complicated almost every case they were involved in, sometimes releasing vessels on slight technicalities when it was clear to everyone else what was going on, and the Royal Navy officers sometimes found themselves having to step in and take action that, technically speaking, went beyond their remit, but once it was done, it couldn't really be undone, such as transporting freed slaves back to their home territories before the end of a court case, so that if the ship owners had argued successfully to keep the slaves aboard during the court case, which some of them did, they wouldn't actually be able to take them away afterwards. The squadron even found itself having to defend the legality of captures by smaller craft, which they'd acquired as tenders to the main warships, allowing them to cover more ground, as some slave owners attempted to argue that, despite being adjutant boats to the frigates and corvettes that were on station, since these tenders themselves weren't technically directly assigned to the station by the Admiralty, any captures that they made didn't count. Luckily, the Royal Navy was able to argue past precedent, and that ruling in any case otherwise would mean that even sending expeditions upriver by the ship's boats would likewise somehow become illegal. A number of slavers were also found to have heavily armed themselves, and several were taken only by means of prolonged chases and gun actions, albeit in these circumstances it turned out you needed more than cannon just to get away, since the more numerous and better trained Royal Navy sailors tended to make rather short work of the slavers once the pursuing warship drew level, even if the number of guns on the slaver was technically more than on its pursuer. An unusual case involved HMS Brazen being pursued herself by a Dutch brig and then shot at. When the warship returned fire and quickly forced the brig's surrender, they discovered that the brig, with 23 slaves aboard, had originally been captured by the Spanish frigate Atalanta, but the prize crew had then turned pirate, plundering an American schooner and attempting to attack Brazen, thinking that she was another slave ship that they could seize. In the end, all the piratical Spanish prize crew got was a trial for piracy, for which the sentence, of course, was to be hanged if they were found guilty, and it turned out the Spanish Navy were rather unconcerned about the fate of a mutinous piratical prize crew. As 1827 dawned, things began to look up for a change. A mixture of tropical disease and career moves meant that some elements of the mixed court had been replaced, with their successors not in favour of helping the slavers out on technicalities as much as their predecessors had been, and the number of prizes seized and swiftly condemned by the courts began to rise rather rapidly. By summer, it was time for Commodore Bullen to be rotated off station. His tenure had seen almost 5,000 slaves liberated, but there were still many more being traded, especially south of the equator, but matters were slowly in motion to correct this eventually, as we'll see later in this video. In the meantime, his replacement was Commodore Collier, son of Admiral George Collier. Sadly, though, in June the squadron would see its first major hull loss when the veteran slave ship hunter HMS Red Wing vanished without a trace. It wouldn't be until 3 months later that some wreckage was found, indicating the ship had probably been hit by lightning in a storm, either then catching fire or exploding immediately, but in either case, the ship was lost with all hands. However, when Collier arrived, he also had specific confirmation from the Admiralty that ships on station could acquire tenders to act on their behalf, as long as they only sold these tenders into other British service once the relevant ship's captain wanted to dispose of them, as several previous tenders had been sold on by civilian officials in Sierra Leone, only for the squadron to then run into their erstwhile adjutant craft, now acting as slavers themselves. Collier's flagship was the large 44-gun 5th-rate frigate HMS Sybil, previously a French vessel that had spent a couple of years under the Tricolore before being captured by the British in 1794. In early September, the ship spotted a brig and she began a chase. The brig tried to cut across the frigate's bow to get to windward to escape, but this meant briefly crossing into range of the frigate's expert bow gunners, who landed several hits and forced the brig to surrender. She proved to be an American-built vessel flying under Brazilian colours, named Henriqueta, a vessel well known to the squadron for being almost absurdly fast and sneaky. She'd managed to successfully accomplish 10 slaving trips in the past 3 years, sending more than 3,000 people to lives on plantations and in various mines. And when she'd been captured, she had another 569 slaves aboard. Sybil sent the brig into Freetown with a prize crew while the frigate went off to capture another slave ship. The Henriqueta was duly condemned by the prize court, and Commodore Collier decided to exercise the authority the Admiralty had granted him and purchase the ship as a tender to his frigate, placing 55 of his best men aboard as a crew under the command of one Lieutenant William Turner. The brig was also given a new name, HMS Black Joke. There was also to be a rebasing of the squadron, at least in theory, since the Spanish had agreed to lease a number of areas on the island of Fernando Po to the British, and this island was much closer to the main area of the squadron's operations. It was less affected by disease, it had plenty of food and water, it had good harbours, and it was in general also nicer in terms of weather. The frigate Eden arrived on station under Captain Owen with orders to facilitate moving the Quartz over to their new home and establishing a naval base, accommodation buildings, and other relevant structures. Thus, as well as normal patrols, the squadron spent part of the autumn and winter of 1827 moving men and supplies down to the new base, which had been named Clarence. Unfortunately, there was something of a spat between Collier, whose main job was the anti-slaving patrols, and Owen, who was primarily tasked with the rebasing efforts, as the latter had allowed his subordinates to grow substantial beards, on the basis that at the time beards were generally held to be the provenance of the most respected of the native elders and chiefs, and so the British officers with beards commanded considerably more respect when dealing with the locals. Whereas Collier was in this case a stickler for the rules, and since the two had semi-independent commands, neither could quite overrule the other, but it made visits between the ships of the two squadrons sometimes fraught. But in better news, the Black Joke was beginning to gain a fearsome reputation thanks to its speed. Having taken a Spanish slaver at the start of 1829 after a brief chase, which it quickly ended by overhauling the slaver and liberating about 160 slaves, in early April she was briefly engaged in a fight with a Spanish brig, which was ostensibly in the area to hunt pirates. Although Lieutenant Turner was able to use his ship's great agility to quickly place himself in a raking position, which forced the Spanish vessel to give in. Although technically legally present in the area and thus allowed to proceed after inspection, the vessel would be sighted a couple of months later, unsurprisingly, with a hold full of slaves. Thanks to various ships going on and off station, the squadron was now made up of the frigate Sybil, along with the Primrose, Clinker, Plumper, and North Star, as well as the Black Joke, which captured a Brazilian slave ship in mid-May with another 645 slaves aboard. After several weeks' interruption, when a store ship was delayed, leaving the squadron mostly riding at anchor without any stores allowing them to go back out to sea, efforts would continue over the summer, leading to the liberation of over 1,100 more slaves, although the need to complete the move to Fernando Po became more and more obvious as a large number of the slaves in these ships were already quite weak, and many died on the long voyage back to Sierra Leone. With diplomatic relations between the British Empire and Brazil finally sorted out, many soon found themselves wishing that actually they hadn't been, since the Brazilian officials who arrived for their part in the mixed courts soon proved themselves somewhat pro-slavery, this being balanced out partially by the fact they showed up weeks after they were supposed to, and they took frequent long leaves of absence. The British officials then being able to use the fact that the treaties between Britain and Portugal had largely been rolled over to also apply to Brazil, unless otherwise noted, and that allowed them to make judgments in the absence of Brazilian officials, since the relevant Anglo-Portuguese treaty did allow for this. Meanwhile, the crew of the Black Joke had added a 12-pound carronade on a pivoting mount to complement the existing fixed armament and the pivoting 18-pounder she'd already had, and in late August, she found three vessels sailing in close company. On approaching the largest, it opened fire, and after some broadsides were exchanged, the British brig bore off, as Lieutenant Turner was wary of fighting in close coastal waters at a 3-to-1 disadvantage. He hoped to lure the largest vessel out alone and then use his speed to chase down the other two. As it happened, the larger ship was an actual pirate vessel, and the other two vessels were its current prizes. The pirate took the bait and pursued the Black Joke, which quickly turned on it and then forced it to surrender with disciplined cannon fire. Owing to the large number of prisoners on the Presidente, which it turned out was the pirate ship's name, it was only possible to recapture one of the other two ships before the other vanished over the horizon. The autumn and winter saw roughly another 2,500 slaves freed in various captures, with another 500 or so freed by the frigate Eden and the various tenders that Captain Owen utilised, making for a total of around 4,500 freed during 1828. In exchange, the squadron had lost Red Wing with her entire crew of 125, with another 81, roughly 1 in 10 of the remaining squadron strength, being lost to disease. 1829 started strong, with many slave ships being seized. Black Joke ran down and captured the El Almirante after a prolonged chase in very light airs, and then a prolonged gun battle which cost the British ship 2 dead, but the slavers 15 of their own. The British gunners having done their best to carefully regulate and aim their shots so as to try and avoid the 466 slaves on board, succeeding almost entirely, save for one or possibly two stray shots which had unfortunately killed 11 of them. By this point she was under the command of one Lieutenant Downes, who was promoted to commander for these actions, although he would later be sent home ill as the year progressed and was superseded in turn by Lieutenant Parry. Another capture, this time by the Sybil, included the recovery of various papers that showed the route slavers were taking to and from Havana, plus letters between slave ships complaining of the squadron's increasing effectiveness, with a consensus among slaver captains that only especially fast or well-armed ships were worth sending into the area anymore. On March the 6th, Black Joke took another slave ship, this one loaded with 420 slaves, but as spring turned into summer, a series of epidemics in the ports along the African coast managed at various points to jump to the squadron's ships, and deaths among the crew from disease rose worryingly. One ship even showed up with a perfectly normal-looking merchant ship in tow. They'd found it adrift at sea with its entire crew dead from various tropical diseases, although this did mean that the warship was thus able to claim uncontested salvage rights. A few vessels managed to either recover from or prevent outbreaks by serving additional rum rations mixed with ground quinine bark, but other vessels would lose up to 50% of their crews in the space of a handful of weeks as vicious waves of disease swept through them. Unfortunately, the epidemics also wiped out most of the nascent colony on Fernando Po, and thus, despite its many advantages, it would never be the full-time base for the squadron and the courts, although it would remain a useful rendezvous and refitting base for many years in the future. Having freed thousands more slaves over the course of 1829, the squadron would face a rather interesting change in 1830. As part of an agreement whereby the British Empire had recognized Brazil's independence in 1826, the latter had promised to abolish slavery by 1830, which was in part why so many Brazilian slave ships had been caught recently, as there was something of a rush to get as many slaves to Brazil as possible before the deadline. The Brazilian government then tried to argue for an extension to this, but mostly failed, only a few months' grace being allowed for ships that sailed in late 1829, who might have been delayed by the weather. But after the 13th of March 1830, any ship caught slaving while under a Brazilian flag could be considered, legally speaking, a pirate. A steady flow of captured ships began to show up at Freetown, with Black Joke's first capture of the year coming somewhat late on the 1st of April when she chased down a brig who was almost as fast as she was, eventually rescuing 354 slaves. In mid-spring, another round of sickness swept the squadron, and Collier and the Sybil had to return home. But by early summer, there was good news that cheered everyone quite considerably. HMS Primrose cruised south of the equator looking to catch ships coming down from the north, only to discover that much of the slave trade in this area was now dead, with multiple slave forts having been burned and abandoned. The reason being that with Brazil now closed to them and the threat of the West Africa Squadron hunting them as pirates, large numbers of Spanish, Portuguese and Brazilian slavers in the area had either quit the business entirely or moved on to other, more distant areas. As Primrose returned to sea, however, she found the infamous slaver Velos Passagera, which had been found and boarded several times over the years by various ships in the squadron, but each time managing to escape either on a technicality or by having papers which legalised her activities, even if it was suspected quite often that the papers were forged, as without proof it had been almost impossible to hold on to the ship. She was a big vessel as well, at times being found to carry almost 1,000 slaves and heavily armed to boot. Even with the advantage of military training, many in the squadron doubted that anything bar a fifth-rate frigate could actually take her if she put up a fight, and Primrose was an 18-gun unrated sloop. But not wanting an opportunity to go to waste, after a somewhat prolonged chase, including a failed boarding attempt during the night, which found the Passagera's considerable armament trained on Primrose's boat under the flimsy auspices of the latter claiming not to know exactly what Primrose's identity was in the dark, Primrose finally bore down on the slaver with all flags set just after sunrise, as the boat, when it returned, had reported the foul stench of a packed slave ship emanating from the vessel's gun ports the night before. When Primrose ranged up alongside her, the slaver threatened to fire if it was subjected to any aggressive action. Primrose gave them a 5-minute warning to reconsider, and then opened fire first, bargaining, correctly, that the slaver's crew, freshly woken up, would be slow and inaccurate with their gunfire. After exchanging opening salvos, Primrose's gunners then managed to get a second broadside off completely uncontested, following which the sloop used her superior speed and agility to cut across the slaver's starboard bow, where the Royal Navy ship could fire her broadside and the slaver could not respond with anything more than a chase gun. Primrose then sent over boarders as the ships came together. Lieutenant Broughton, in command, led the charge and was stabbed in the abdomen by a pike for his troubles, but after 10 minutes of vicious hand-to-hand fighting, the remaining slaver crew found themselves on the poop deck with nowhere left to go but over the side and into the sea, and so they surrendered. The final tally was 3 killed and 12 wounded from Primrose against 46 killed and 20 wounded from the Spanish ship, as well as 5 slaves who'd been caught in the crossfire. The Spanish captain, having lost his arm to a particularly enthusiastic cutlass blow, was forced to show his captors where his cargo of 556 slaves was being kept. Broughton was taken back to Primrose to recover, and Velos Passagera was duly condemned at the appropriate court, bringing its slaving career to an end. The squadron continued to rack up prizes, and in late November the 36-gun HMS Dryad appeared, with Commodore Hayes aboard, along with a cutter, the Seaflower, which Hayes had designed himself. Hayes reorganised the squadron somewhat, sending regular patrols north, as a number of slaves recently freed had stated in good English that they were in fact residents of Sierra Leone and had been kidnapped from that area. He also had a launch stationed in Freetown to ferry supplies out to his ships, which minimised any time that his men would have to spend ashore there, thus trying to avoid the worst of the waves of the diseases that was still sweeping through the town periodically. It was now well into 1831, with black jokes seizing the Primiera, with the crew horrified to discover that the slave deck on the small schooner was only 2 foot 2 inches high, or just over 60 centimetres, and in an effort to cope with this restriction, the Spanish slavers had ensured that half of the 311 slaves they'd taken aboard were children, as they fitted easier into the tiny space. A change in government back in the UK led to an anticipation through the squadron that the new Whig Party would try to restrict the squadron's capabilities by bureaucratic means, as between the two governing parties at the time, the Whigs had always been a little bit more leery of anti-slaving activities. So the outgoing First Lord of the Admiralty quickly wrote and dispatched 8 sets of papers for ships' tenders to act on behalf of the squadron, along with encouragement for the squadron to get as many tenders into service as possible before his successor tried to put a stop to the practice. By this point, Black Joke had already been fairly heavily worn out by a couple of years' heavy sailing, and so the seized slaver Dos Amigos was quickly bought, renamed Fair Rosamond, and listed officially as a replacement for Black Joke, which was itself still technically speaking a tender. At the same time, Black Joke was partially refitted so she could get one last tour in while her successor was being fitted out and shown the ropes. Thus, in late February, she found herself chasing a schooner which was also being chased by a large frigate. This proved to be USS Java, which got to the schooner first thanks to the latter trying to break across Java's bow to escape. Lieutenant Castle, Black Joke's latest commanding officer, was received warmly by the Java, who informed him that the squadron had permission to treat any American slavers they caught as pirates. In late April, Black Joke would find herself in pursuit of a particularly swift brig, which turned to fight when it became clear that she couldn't escape. At this stage, armed with just 2 heavy pivot-mounted guns, the Royal Navy ship was technically outgunned 5-2 in terms of armament, but she solved this by running up close, delivering 2 heavy blasts of grape shot across the target's deck and then dropping off 18 boarders before the wind swept the ships apart. The slaver crew resisted. One midshipman had his hat shot off and was then knocked overboard by one of the slavers, but he emerged from the sea a few minutes later and hauled himself back into the fight, appearing over the gunwale with his cutlass between his teeth. Meanwhile, Black Joke had come about and lashed itself to the brig, reinforcements thus flowing across, although a particularly vicious parrot on the slaver was reported to have bit another midshipman's finger. Once the fighting ended with the Spanish slaver's surrender, the British had lost 1 person killed and 4 wounded, while the slavers had lost 13 killed and 15 wounded, plus 25 slaves who'd been crushed when the slaves below deck had panicked at the sound of the gunfire. It also turned out that the slaves had been denied water for quite some time, and so there was some difficulty in supplying it without provoking yet another stampede. In September, the Fair Rosamond and Black Joke teamed up, after both separately receiving an intel that a pair of well-armed Spanish brigs, with 18 guns between them, were loading slaves in the Bonny River. Spotting the British vessels in hot pursuit, the Spanish ships headed up a tributary and tried to hide. The first one, Regulo, was found to have run aground and was trying to land her slaves via canoes. A single warning shot was enough to induce a surrender, and Fair Rosamond, which had used freshly arrived Admiralty charts to shape a closer course, left it for the following Black Joke to deal with. Soon after, the British came across the other vessel, Rapido, which had already filled all of its canoes and was now seen to be trying to throw the rest of its slaves, all shackled in pairs, into the river, which was full of crocodiles. A volley of musket fire forced the Rapido's crew to cease their activities, but only one pair of slaves was successfully fished out of the water to safety, as the wildlife or drowning claimed the others before Fair Rosamond could close the final distance to help. 2 British palm oil trader vessels, who'd been part of the group that had provided the intel in the first place, now came up from the River Bonny to help the Royal Navy vessels in their efforts to patch up and lighten their prizes, so to get them back afloat on the next spring tide. This took about a week, mostly waiting for the spring tide to arrive, and both prizes were duly condemned and the surviving slaves set free once they got back to Sierra Leone. There was other good news. the use of the French flag had dropped off dramatically over the past year. It turned out this was the result of King Louis-Philippe coming to the throne in mid-1830 and agreeing to declare slave trading under the French flag a crime, with 10 to 20 years of imprisonment, including up to 10 years of hard labour, for any Frenchman caught at sea with slaves in his cargo hold. The French had also agreed a mutual right of search and seizure with the British, making the French flag suddenly useless as a fig leaf for slave traders. And thus came the dawn of 1832, with rather large changes afoot for the squadron, but we'll look at that in the next video in the series.
That's it for this video. Thanks for watching. If you have a comment or suggestion for a ship to review, let us know in the comments below. Don't forget to comment on the pinned post for dry dock questions.